The views expressed in this episode and all episodes are solely those of the host and their guest. The content here should not be considered as, nor should it replace, professional, medical, or mental health advice. This podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only.
Hello, everyone. So yes, it's been a while because life be lifing. But here is a beautiful interview that's going to end up being two parts because I didn't realize how long it was. It is such a beautiful conversation with an amazing, talented, beautiful human being, and I can't wait for you all to hear it. So here's part one, and you'll get part two actually next week since I'm so behind in, putting out these episodes.
Hi, hello, Mustana, how are you? I'm Laura, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and this is Profoundly Seen, the podcast that explores mental health themes through pop culture and personal stories. Every episode, I invite my guests to talk about a pop culture reference that has impacted them deeply and explore mental health themes related to their experience in the hopes of depathologizing the human experience and normalizing therapy in the same way that we normalize a regular doctor's appointment. In today's episode, we're exploring The Exorcist. In this movie, a mysterious entity possesses a young girl, leading her mother to seek help initially from medical professionals and then Catholic priests. Today, my guest is Anne Alexander Cedar. She is an actor and founder of Act Bold. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Laura. So nice to be here. Thank
you.
Yay.
Thank you for coming.
Oh, my God. It chills up and down my spine already.
I know, me too. Yeah. I'm so excited. I'm so excited. Thank you so much for taking the time to have this conversation with me. This is going to be so much fun. Do you want to take some time to introduce yourself more? Tell us a little bit more about Act Bold and
sure.
The little programs, the programs that you told me about?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So, yes, I am an American actor. I was a professional actor in the States, SAG-AFTRA, working on my equity card. In fact, doing well enough so that I didn't even have to have a side hustle when I met this hot German guy and ended up moving to Germany and very quickly starting our family and all of that. And not knowing how I was supposed to be an actor when I didn't speak or understand the language.
Oh.
And yeah, so that was just one little hitch in the,
there. Yeah.
And when, so pretty quickly, I won't drag it out too much, but pretty quickly I started to get established doing voiceover work, which led to presenting work, which led to commercials. Mm-hmm. And while that was all great, lucrative, flexible, I was known for bringing my son and my dog to the studio with me.
Oh,
fine. It just wasn't what I got into acting for, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't like what I signed up for. So when my son, flash forward now about 16 years, my son's a teenager, mm-hmm. and we had a standing movie date every Friday night, and he came to me on Thursday, and he's like, Mom, that Friday night thing, that's got to go. I'm going to have my friends, we're done.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I have time to think about me.
Yeah.
And it was the first time that I really did in all of that time, really.
Like, yeah, wow, 16 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Like really, really, what would just bring me joy?
Yeah.
And the answer was, well, I was like, I wonder if there's an acting workshop around here in English. So I sat down and I Googled in Germany, right? I sat down and I Googled acting workshop Munich English.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, there was a coach out of LA starting a workshop the very next day, and there was one spot open.
Wow.
So I jumped into that. I immediately took it and I left that knowing that it just basically lit that pilot flame that had been on a low burn all these years.
Yeah.
And just combusted. And at that point, I knew I had to relaunch my career. So that led to everything. Which, and at this point now I have relaunched my career. You can catch me right now on Netflix in the Hallmark Christmas movie, A Heidelberg Holiday. That was 11 years ago that I officially relaunched.
Wow.
And since then, I've also become a career coach for actors with my program, Get Better Roles. And I also help other people, creatives, who are maybe not happy with the work that they're doing, but don't see a way to turn their passion or burning curiosity into their livelihood or at least a great side income. Yeah. So I help people turn what they love into what they do without having to be a expert influencer or coach. And the way That's we awesome. Do that is basically just curating experts and coaches and organizing events around that. And I take people by the hand and teach them how to do that based on my own experience of having done that in my career. So there we go.
That's so awesome. Yeah, I have I was just thinking about a lot of my clients who are actually creatives and how hard it is to find your footing if you don't have the right connections or the right people who know how to do that. And I'm like, I'm useless to you. I'm sorry, because I don't know. Now I do. I have you. It Yay.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're...
I was just going to say, it's so true. There. I think so many people would have stopped at, too bad there aren't any other English speaking acting workshops in Munich. Now I can't live my dream.
Exactly.
And I always find that the problem is the key to the solution. So you just need to ask. So that was literally telling me what the problem was. There were no other acting workshops here in Munich of the caliber that I wanted in English. So that's what I did. That's how I began to bring coaches and experts to Munich. And I knew I just needed a handful of other actors to make it viable. And what so quickly started to happen was I was getting the training for free. I was creating a community, which, I mean, it wasn't even like on my radar. Like that word even 13, 14 years ago wasn't a thing, you know. But it truly is a valuable part of any journey. And it's one of the things I've learned as far as like, you know, to have a thriving career when you are the brand. Is, you know, you need to have the five pillars of this thriving career, which is mindset, branding, marketing, networking, and community. So community is like one of my pillars even. But not only did I have the free training and the community being built, but also I was earning between 1,000 to 2,000 per workshop. So it was great. It was a great side income. It really supported my and my acting career. At the same time, without having to do like something else that was completely like side jobs. Unrelated.
And I think that's what a lot of my clients are finding. It's that like it's so hard to focus on this dream and this goal and have to have this job because that's what's going to help me to have a place to live in while I try to become an actor or a singer or like a playwright or whatever, right? Like, and it is like, how are you supposed to focus on your goal and on your dream when you also have to be somewhere else doing stuff there
when
too?
You have to pay the rent and eat.
Exactly.
And maybe clothe a little one or something, right? And, you know, I think we've all been kind of fed this myth of the starving artist. Like, you know, in order to be like a true artist, you need to be a starving artist.
You have to suffer.
You have to suffer. And I heard a great phrase today from Ellie Fadden, who I was on her podcast, Maverick Minds. And she said, you know, that's being broken. And I'm not that, you know, I'm not in for that. And I just thought that was such a great way to put it. So true. And the truth of it is when you are so concerned about, oh my God, please let me book this because so I can pay my rent. You are not free to create. You are not free to be spontaneous. You are, because you're so preoccupied, literally preoccupied with existential worries and fears.
Sorry, still have a cough.
That's okay.
I think actually too, like even in like my journey to having a podcast, it was always in the back of my head, not even that I would start one. It just that like, oh gosh, wouldn't it be so cool if there was a podcast that existed that did this? Because I'm obsessed. Like I talk about pop culture stuff and mental health in my my sessions with clients. And I'm like, oh, there's all these amazing ways to like tie Disney into mental health, or, you know, The Exorcist into it. Mental yes. health, and yeah. to like talk about it all. Yeah. And I use it, right? I'm like, yeah. you have ADHD, you're Superman. Like, yeah. you know, all of
this
stuff.
I can't wait to have you analyze me.
yeah. Why is Exorcist my movie?
What is that saying? I'm Reagan. I'm Reagan. No, not the devil.
yeah.
Hey, right. It,
yeah. Oh gosh. yeah. But yeah, I was just like, you know, maybe it does exist, maybe it doesn't. It's just not, it hasn't been presented to me. I haven't seen it. I've never heard of it. And then I finally started, I was like, you know, I maybe I should get like a business coach to help me. With my business as a therapist, and I was telling her about like, oh, this long-term dream of having a podcast eventually. She was like, just do it. like,
yeah, do it.
What's stopping you from doing it? Yeah. yeah. And I was like, well, you know, that way you were talking about the, when you're so preoccupied about how you're going to meet your basic needs, it's really hard to be creative and to step into a space where you have to be vulnerable and like allow people to see you and create and really be present, because it's hard to do that when you're scared of like you're not going to be able to eat or you're not going to be able to pay the bills or whatever.
And or maybe not, if I show them who I really am, they won't like me, and then I won't yeah. get the job. And
yeah, yeah.
Whereas if you don't have that, if it's like, hey, my rent is paid, my food is, you know, my fridge is full, I'm good. Like, I don't need, I would love to have this. I would love to do it, maybe, if it's, if it is something that aligns with the roles that I like. But otherwise, but it's just entirely a different way of looking at it. And we all know that confidence and not needing something or someone is sexy. It's, and I don't mean that sexy in terms of like sexy. It's like,
yeah, like sex appeal. Yeah.
It's attractive. It's,
yeah.
It, you know, it pulls people to you, not pushes them away, which is, isn't that funny? You're a therapist. Maybe you can explain. What is that about when somebody needs something so much, they want it so bad that it literally repels other people?
Oh, gosh. Good question. I don't even know the answer. Let me see. Hold on. So.
And just the opposite, too, right? When you don't want something, then people are like, no, I want it. Yeah.
I want you.
I want you. Yeah.
yeah. Yeah, I think about a conversation that I've had in another interview about manifesting, right? And of like, yeah, there's this supernatural thing about it, but then there's also just a, when it's so at the forefront of your brain, but it isn't like a, I'm desperate for it. It's more of like, it's there in my future and I know it's going to happen and I'm sure and I'm certain of it, then every step you take and everything that you do is pushing you and pulling you in that direction, because that it's, you know, I don't know if you're a dancer, but you know, wherever, where your head goes, where your eyes go, your body follows, right? Where your eyes go, your body follows. And it's the same thing with your goals. And so it doesn't have to be like this desperate want or need, because it's already there. You already know where your eyes go, your body will follow. Mm. And where you focus is where you're going to go in life, right? So it isn't like a desperate need or desire. It's just a certainty. And I think
No, I get that. I was just curious what it is about the opposite happening, right? So if I don't want something, if I could care less, those are usually the jobs I book. When I really, really want it, when it's like, yes, this would be life-changing. What, you know, I really, really, that's the one I never get.
Oh, gosh.
So, and that goes with human beings, right? When you really, really want someone. Right?
Yeah.
I can remember that as a teenager. It was always the guys I didn't want that were always, right? Get off me. No way.
Stop. You're too much.
Down boy.
You're trying too high.
Yeah. And the ones who were like a little bit aloof, I was like, oh, okay, who are you? You know, I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm going to think about that. I don't even have an answer right now.
It'll come to you.
Yeah, probably later, and they'll be like, damn it.
4 in the morning, yeah.
I know, that would have been so smart to say in the moment. I'm trying to be so smart right now, but I don't have an answer.
Right.
Like, I want to think of, like, you know, kind of like what you were saying, it's just attractive to be very sure and certain, and there's something about that, like, neediness that for some reason it's palpable, right? Like, even if
I wonder if that is part of it, because apparently I'm also a little nerdy, so I was listening to one of the TED Talks or something. No, it was Diary of a CEO, but she was what's her name, Vanessa Van Edwards. Are you familiar with her work?
No. She's great. Also, I never remember people's names.
Okay.
It's
okay.
Like horrible.
Really great. She gave a great talk on Diary of a CEO. And, and one of the things she said was, I think this was her, I hope it was. Anyway, that they did a study. They had people wear a jogging suit, and they had half of the people jog, like go for a jog, and the other half of the people skydive.
Okay.
And yes, wearing that sweatsuit. And then they gave they let participants then smell each of the sweaty suits. Lovely, I know. But they had them hooked up to all these machines. And the interesting thing was, the people that smelled of fear actually triggered that part of the amygdala in the brain, and the people sniffing it.
Interesting.
So I wonder if there are these subtle animal things happening that we're not even aware of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That would make sense to me a lot, right? That, like, because I don't know if you have the same thing, but for me especially, like, I feel pretty sensitive to anxiety when it enters the room, and especially when someone has a lot of it. And it's different when I'm like in my therapist's role and my therapist brain, but when I'm just like in the regular world and someone walks into a room with anxiety, I can feel that immediately, and I feel so not repulsed, but definitely like hesitant to want to be around that person, because it activates my big anxiety parts too. And I'm just like, oh, I don't want to be around that, because I don't want to feel that tenseness in my body that I'm getting from you. So that person could have never said anything, and I'd still feel it somehow. And so that makes sense to me in my own experience. So yeah, that makes sense, which I've said like 3 times already.
I get it. Makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you wanted to say?
Yep. Thanks. Okay, so we're going to get into the movie in a bit here, but before we do that, I wanted to ask, like, what's your mood right now?
I'm excited, and I am slightly like a little bit nervous to even talk about The Exorcist.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I'm okay. I like just feel like shivers going down my spine already around.
Yeah. From like
it was very traumatizing.
Okay. Oh no! I can't wait.
I'm glad you're a therapist. Hold me gently.
Yes. Lots of openness for that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. You mentioned that you did have some therapy experience in the past. Is what, if anything, would you be willing to share about what that was like for you, and if it was helpful, and what about it might have been helpful or not helpful even?
Sure. I've had lots of therapy in my life. I've had my parents divorced when I was 2, and then there was a custody fight when I was 10.
Oh, wow.
And this was also the year I was 10 when I saw The Exorcist. My mother was getting a divorce from her second husband.
Oh, wow.
So there was like a lot of like really strong tensions going on in my life. Yeah. And I did see a therapist then. And then I was a very rebellious, troubled teen. So I definitely saw therapists around that. And I ended up in a gestalt. Gestalt boarding school for troubled teens for a little while. Yeah, ran away, but, you know, didn't like that place very much. And I would say for the most part, here's what I found. I mean, I think that there are good therapists and bad therapists, just like everything. My father was a very controlling man when I was a teenager. My dad is now dead, but we were able to repair our relationship and it ended on a good note. I just want to say that. But at the time it was, you know, it was difficult. And I think that I felt that there was no privacy. So I never would open up to this therapist because I felt like no matter what I would say to her, she would report back to my dad. That was my impression. It may have been wrong because I know it's you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
But that was kind of my impression. I used to bring a book and just read.
Oh my God.
I was so obnoxious. Yeah.
I would have. When I was working with teenagers, it was like at the beginning of my career as a therapist. And if somebody had done that, I would have been like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
What do I do? But I think now if somebody did that, I'd be like, ooh, what are you reading? And I would bring the same books.
So, you know what? That's super smart. Yeah. That might have drawn me in. But she would she was always like, you know, so you don't want to talk? Uh-huh. Obviously not.
You know? I'm reading.
Duh.
Can you shut up? This is interesting.
And then, let's see. My son, for a hot minute, we brought him to therapy. I'm trying to think. He did not react well in a crowded situation in kindergarten. So he really got along well with the kids when they were out running around. But as soon as there were too many kids like around him and pressing in on him, he would,
try to get the distance.
Yeah. And so they're very sensitive about all that. They probably are everywhere in the world, but in Germany, they're very sensitive about all that. It's like, kids need to be nice. You know, you can't get therapy. You know? So I did take him to a therapist, and she had him draw a picture of our family. And she said, but use animals. What kind of animal is your mommy and what kind of animal is your daddy and what kind of animal are you? And I was a horse, so I was thrilled with that. I love it. He sees me.
In all my glory.
Exactly. And he drew himself as a bat. And I was so disturbed originally. And she said, why does that disturb you? Which I thought was a great question. And I said, well, bats, they're Dracula, creepy, night, you know, it's all that kind of stuff. He's like, bats are free and they're unique and they're smart and they're mammals and they're, you know, she went on and on to say like all these fabulous things. And now I love bats. I'm like, maybe there is a connection. I never thought about that.
Why you love bats now?
Yes, I do. I love them. Yeah. And so... But it was really interesting. And then he had drawn my husband, which is so not my husband, but drew him as a mouse, which is not my husband. I mean, my husband is like hyper, you know, kind of masculine and alpha and all of that. And so I have no idea what that was.
Interesting.
What that represented for him.
Yeah. But, it'd be interesting.
My husband was not pleased.
Like what?
Mouse? Explain the good thing about being a mouse.
It'd be interesting. I don't know that your son could remember, but it'd be interesting if he could remember why he drew everybody in the way that he did and what significance that was. Yeah.
Yeah. He's coming in tomorrow.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I had a teacher, an English teacher once. She had us, the prompt was to write a poem about ourselves as animals. And I don't remember. I was like, I think I was talking about how I want to be a certain kind of animal, but I wasn't. I was a mouse, like a really tiny, insignificant mouse who like heard everything, right? And I look back at this now and I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense, because I had a lot of insecurities and I did feel very small at the time. And so it'd be really interesting to understand from his perspective why he drew you as a horse and himself as a bat and your husband as a mouse and what.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I guess like mice and bats are similar, except that bats can
eat mice. Oh, never mind. Okay. Yeah. They have a lot more freedom. Yeah.
Yeah. They can fly and they have a lot of cool qualities about they eat bugs. I hate bugs.
I know, I'm over here like, bats eat mice, right?
No.
Do they?
No, they eat bugs and they eat fruit.
Fruit, okay.
And there is, I think, one species of bat that will like scrape a cow and lick the blood.
Yeah, but,
yeah.
No. Okay. I'm like, vampires. Very gently,
just scrape a little bit, you know.
Just to get some.
Just a little bit.
Speaking of blood.
Yeah.
So let's get into talking about The Exorcist.
Yeah.
And, you know, just your general thoughts on the movie, and then we can get into the specific scene that you wanted to talk about. So,
yeah,
The Exorcist. I looked it up and I lost it.
Had you seen it before?
I thought that I had. And then I started watching it again last night at 10.
Did you watch the director's cut?
I didn't. Oh, I should have.
Yes, you should have.
Oh, I didn't even know there was the option to do that.
Yeah.
I just looked at like what the streaming options were available. Now I think I'm going to do that. Except I'm scared. I was scared. Honestly really scared to watch it because I thought that I had seen it. And I'm watching through and I was like, none of this looks familiar. And I don't understand what's happening. And I was like, I get. And then I had to step out of this perception that I'd seen it before and be like, no, this is the first time that you've seen this movie. So watch the movie and stop trying to think that you know what's supposed to happen. So that was a really interesting experience for me because I thought it was supposed to be something.
Probably because it just is so much it comes up as a cultural reference.
Yeah.
So many modern movies use the tropes that came from The Exorcist or use the scary things like, that originally came from The Exorcist.
Came from The Exorcist, yeah.
So you it seems familiar. I could see why it seems familiar.
Yeah.
But it's
It wasn't.
So as a movie overall, I think it's honestly kind of a masterpiece.
It is.
I mean, it did win several Academy Awards.
Yeah.
Which I think it's the only horror movie that ever did win Academy Awards.
Wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I think it won it for best screenplay. I think Ellen Burstyn won for her portrayal of the mother.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Was it? Who was the director on that? It wasn't Polanski. I can't think.
I can look it up.
Coming to me, yeah. It did. It won a bunch of Academy Awards. So I think as far as like a storytelling, it was masterfully done.
I thought so too.
Yeah.
A lot better than I was expecting. Like I really, because a lot of I think scary movies kind of just get into the scary stuff.
Yeah.
And this spent a lot of time, like the first 30, 45-ish minutes weren't scary at all.
No.
Yeah.
Except for when the guy goes up into the attic, right?
And then Yeah.
And, there was the only jump scare in the movie, though.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
I think so, yeah. And there was like a hint of something before that where they bring out the Ouija board and it moves. And that's
right.
I know, me too. I was like, whoa, did I just see what I thought I saw?
Yeah.
And like they did it and they first introduced the the tormentor.
Captain Howdy.
Yeah, Captain. Yeah.
Trust me.
What
I
a
know
name.
All this stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and just think how like evil, and I mean, truly, true evil is not going to show up looking like true evil.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it won't. Like,
it
how
won't.
Is it supposed to bring you in?
Thing. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So I think it was really, really well done. And I loved the conflict that the mother had, that the Ellen Burstyn had, no?
Mm-hmm.
Because she was, there was so much to that role.
Yeah.
Right? Okay, so now I'm looking at it from an actor's point of view, but still.
Perfect.
There was so much to that role. She was trying to protect her daughter
mm-hmm.
from, well, let's assume everybody's seen this. It's from the 70s.
Yeah, I'm going to assume everyone's seen it.
Also, so if we spoil it for anyone.
Yeah. My whole podcast.
Spoilers, people.
My whole podcast is just a spoiler.
Okay, good. So if you haven't seen it, go pause us right now. Go watch yeah. The Exorcist and come back. Watch the director's cut. So anyway, so her whole thing is like when the police inspector comes and he's wondering how the director was murdered or
yeah.
how the director's neck was broken in the way it was broken
uh-huh.
as he fell down the stairs, and it just didn't make sense and it seems more like a murder, and yet uh-huh. the only one in the room was the little girl, and how could this be? And
yeah,
so he's just trying to, yeah, he's just trying to get like a lay of like what are we dealing, but yeah. he's still dealing at this from a strictly human point of view. Like
yeah.
who else was here? What else was going mm-hmm. on? How could this, you know, how could this happen?
Be possible, yeah.
Yeah. And the mom is at this point beyond suspecting that her daughter is possessed, is not her mm-hmm. daughter. And mm-hmm. yet she knows her daughter's in there.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's got to protect her baby mm-hmm. while at the same time. Yeah, not. I mean, shoot, that scene. That's one of my favorite scenes from the movie.
Uh-huh.
As an adult, as a kid,
yeah.
it wasn't necessarily where they're sitting in the dining room,
uh-huh.
and the devil's making all the noise, and you know the mother's just like you know trying to explain that her daughter is not herself, and the
mm-hmm.
you know that she's, and there's all these conflicting emotions going on, and it was just
yeah.
so well done.
Yeah. yeah. Yeah.
yeah,
I think those scenes for me that stood out probably from like a mental health perspective is that all the ones where she was talking to professionals and she's just like,
when
don't
Reagan
you
was
see?
Speaking to the-
no,
oh, when
the mom, yeah.
Yes.
When the mom was speaking to all the professionals, because and every time that they did something to Reagan to try to prove that this was a medical issue.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, how. Because there's like white coat syndrome, right? Where people will always defer authority and knowledge to somebody who has like a degree, a medical degree or whatever. So they won't ask questions and they'll just believe whatever you say. And here's this mom who knows her baby and she's just like, no, like I know what I know and I can't tell you why I know this, but I have to advocate. This isn't a medical problem. There's whatever you think is happening, it's not what's happening. Someone figure it out. Like, I
yeah.
just help her.
And just like this desperation and
yeah.
that you're not being
yeah.
heard.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And that nobody is like understanding what's happening. And since they don't understand what's actually happening, they can't actually help you.
Exactly. Yeah.
And they might actually be making the problem worse.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I mean, luckily that priest comes along, so
yeah, both of them. I was actually so there was a part of me that was kind of annoyed because it was like I for whatever again right I thought I'd seen it, so I thought the priest was a part of it the entire time. Right, and the beginning I was like, what does this have to do with Reagan? What does this have to do with her story? And then he disappears for a majority of it, and then he comes back at the very end, and I was like a little thrown by that. And I was like, okay, I mean, I guess I understand, but like they needed his expertise, but I was like expecting something. And so I was like, I don't know, that threw me for some reason.
Yeah. Well, not me, but I mean, I saw it when I was 10, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I can remember the ads on TV. Mm-hmm. Like as a little kid, it was 1976. You know, as I said, there was all this stuff happening in my house at the time.
Yeah.
And the ads would come on and I was like, oh my God, I need to see that, you know? Uh-huh. And I remember running downstairs to the kitchen to tell my mom, take me to see this movie. And she's like, are you out of your mind? I read that book. I don't want to see that. And my mom was like a chic hippie. You know, I mean, it wasn't and she was only 21 years older than I was. So she was probably, you know, 30, 31, 32. Mm-hmm. She was still young at the time. And so I kept bugging my mom. I want to see it. 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 And I would bug my father, who was, because there was this custody fight going on. Mm-hmm. I had learned that I could, well, if mom won't let me do this, then maybe dad will. And so, and vice versa, right? Mm-hmm. So there was that going on as well. So my dad was leaving to go to Europe, I think, for like a 3-week trip or something. Mm-hmm. And I remember him saying, you know, you better not see that movie, you know, and your mother better not let you see that movie and da, da, da. And then I went and saw it. So my mom, her best friend, this is the 70s again, my mother's best friend drives me and her son up to the movie theater. Neither one of my mother nor her best friend want to see this movie. They're like signing the papers because you had to sign a paper because it was rated R back then. So they signed the paper saying that, yeah, we can see the movie. They're the guardians. We can see it. Go see ya. So they drop us. She drops us off. We go inside. Mm-hmm. This is back in the day where they still had ushers.
Yeah.
Right. Uh-huh. So there's this kid. He's probably, I don't know, 15, but you know, old to me, let me tell you. So he takes us to our seats, we sit down, and that first part where they find the statue in Iraq or Iran, whatever it is, and in the bed, Reagan is just kind of doing this thing, like, you know, the demon is coming into our house, into her. My friend Seth turns to me at this point, and he's like, I have to go to the bathroom. And he leaves, and he does not come back. Period.
Oh my God.
And so I'm 10. He's 10 and a half. I mean, we're little kids, right?
Yeah.
So I'm like sitting on the seat, you know, with my legs out because I don't want anything to grab me from underneath. Yeah. Finally, at like a lull in the action, whatever it was, I get up. But I'm not going to leave the theater. Now I have to see this, right?
Yeah.
So I get up and there's this, I remember the theater being empty too because it was an afternoon. And there's this kid standing at the back, the usher, standing at the back of the movie theater watching the movie. And so I go stand next to him. And just back to watching the movie, right?
Someone.
How you didn't stay here.
Good. I'll protect me.
And he just kind of like looks down. Totally bored. He's probably seen it 5,000 times, whatever.
It's not even scary anymore.
Not even scary. And so that night I get home and this house was an amazing house that we lived in. I had this room that I was sharing with my littlest sister. Uh-huh. So she was 4.5 years younger than I am. And then I have another sister who's a year younger than I am. So the little one, though, would always go sleep with her mom, especially because she was divorcing his dad. So the space in the bed was free. So my little sister would always go sleep with her. So I'm like, all right, sleep, right? So, scary. Yes, all these similarities too. In our house, like we had that pull down attic.
Oh God.
I'm a little girl with dark hair. She's a little girl with dark hair. You know, there are lots of things going on. My mom's going through a tough time. You know, that lady was going through a tough time. My mom was like this model and this. There were just too many similarities.
Oh gosh, yeah, because the mom is an actress in the
movie. She's an actress.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm like, okay. And my sister, the one who's a year younger, was like, you know, come sleep with me. I'm figuring it. I'm hoping that, you know, she's a little bit chubby. I'm like, the juicy one. Don't date me.
You're sacrificing your little sister. She's got so much more to offer.
Please don't take me. And if something happens, let me know so I can get the hell out of here. Anyway, so that went on like that for about 2 weeks, whatever the remainder of my dad's trip. And then my dad came home and I told him, I was like, I saw it, you know, and he was like, what? You know, you're going to have terrible dreams and this and that. And of course, that night I started to have horrible nightmares and it woke up. I was so afraid that I was violently shaking. And because I was so terrified, my two little sisters are like, oh my God, you know? So my mom had three hysterical girls in her bed for the first like a week. And then she started rotating us out. So two of us would be sleeping on sleeping bags on the floor and one would get to sleep on the bed and we would rotate every night. Mm-hmm. That went on for a year.
Oh, your poor mom.
We sold the house. Out of here. Let's get it.
Start anew.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah.
That's so funny. Yeah. So when, was it Insidious? No. Ooh. No. There's another movie, which was like one of the first in the 2000s, like based on a true story. Like perspective of like people videotaping their own experiences.
Oh, Evil Dead.
Was it Evil Dead?
But Evil Dead was a fake movie.
It was a fake one.
It was a found footage thing.
Yeah. It was like after Blair Witch Project. Oh, I wish I remember which movie it was. But the layout of the house was so much like the layout in the movie. Mm. And my room was the room where all the scary stuff happened. And I was like, damn it. And I was a full adult when I had watched that. Yeah, and my cousin and I were living with my aunt and I was upstairs and she was downstairs. And I was so scared I would go downstairs and crawl into bed with her. Because it was terrifying.
It is terrifying, especially because it's like something you have no control over it. You have no way, you don't even know if it's there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be something could be watching you or you don't, you know, and just that something can invade you, truly invade you.
Into your body,
And take over. Yeah.
And
that's terrifying.
It is. And then also if you like add the layer right of spirituality and also like just mental health to it, it's when you're in such a scary and low place and there's so much like negative bad juju around you and so much disruption and chaos around you, it's very easy again to get lulled into those like evil nooks and crannies and to leave yourself open to things like that, to crawling in. And I think it sounds like for you, there was a lot of difficult like strife and stuff going on in your life. And for me, same too, when I watched these movies, there was a lot of strife and difficulties in my life. And I was like, oh no, I'm opening myself up.
Honestly, I do believe in that. And this whole like seeing The Exorcist, it put me and my sister like in this sort of morbid fascination with it for the rest of our lives, which is maybe I don't have it so much anymore, but I definitely did. Like I read all of the books by that couple, Edward and whatever her name is. They were like true exorcists.
I know who you're talking about.
Couple. And so I read all their books and their true accounts of demons and exorcising demons.
Yeah.
And I read The Exorcist a couple of times.
A couple of times, Anne.
I know.
Oh my gosh.
And then when the director's cut came out, I remember like seeing the ads for this. This was like in the early 2000s.
When
the director's cut came
out. Oh gosh.
And I remember like saying to my husband that night, the director's cut of The Exorcist is out. And he's like, yeah.
Okay.
So, and I'm like, I'm going to get it. So I go to the grocery store, I get that director's cut. And so I'm like, I got it. And he's like, uh-huh. And I was like, well, we're going to watch it. And he's like, I'm not watching that. And I'm trying to shame him, right? I was like, right? He's like, yes, absolutely. I'm terrified. No, thank you. So I take my son to kindergarten the next day. Beautiful sunny day. I pop myself a big bowl of popcorn. I put the director's cut into the VCR, or no, DVD, whatever that was.
DVD probably,
yeah. Right. And I sit down on the couch, I lean back to watch it, and it's the scene where what you saw in the movie is Reagan comes down the stairs and pees on the floor at the party.
Yeah.
The director's cut is... she is skittling backwards down the stairs like a spider.
Oh my God. I'm so glad I didn't watch the director's cut now. I could not
get that. I was like, oh my God. Looking for the remote control. Stop.
Fast forward.
Yeah, like trying to catch my breath. And I'm just like, okay, the sun is here. Right. I'm okay. It's just a movie.
Yeah.
I put it back on and I immediately have to turn it off again. I'm like, okay. How about I just listen to it, watch it while the director speaks what's actually happening? Yeah. Uh-huh. Because then I'll know what he was thinking while he was making. Yeah. Did not help. I couldn't watch the whole movie. I just couldn't do it. And then that night I slept with my grown man husband and my grown man woman self. He would always fall asleep before I did anyway, because I used to read at night.
Yeah.
And so I had to have the light on, obviously, to read. And so I just left the light on and scooched over to him and hold me.
Please. But also take him. He's big and strong.
He can handle it. I can't. That's too funny. Yeah.
That's hilarious.
But that was like the last time. I think that like maybe cured me of it. Although when you were saying like leaving yourself open to something, when I was like 19 years old, maybe I wasn't even that old, maybe 17 something. Uh-huh. I had been out to California. I can remember this. I had been out to California. It was when Shirley MacLaine had this book out. This is way before your time, but Shirley MacLaine had this book out about like either astral traveling or past life regression. It was one of those. And I had been at the Bodhi Tree, which was this great. Do you know the Bodhi Tree?
I've heard of it, but please explain.
So it was like this metaphysical bookstore in LA where like all people would go to and get their metaphysical books and candles and crystals and all those kind of things. So I went and had gotten these books on astral traveling and past life regressions. Both like a great adventure to me. It's like I don't even have to go anywhere and I can see the world.
I can see it from here.
Yes, exactly. So I took them back and I was back in Detroit at this point, and I would really like every day I would lay in my bed and there were two visualizations I would do. One of them for the astral traveling, it was like I would imagine that my soul was rising up out of my body and turning over to face me. Mm-hmm. And when it was, and I, one day as I'm doing this, I kind of felt something in me like shift. And I was like, and it scared me. And it woke me up and I was like, I don't think I'm going to do this astral traveling thing. Let's do past life regressions.
Instead. Let's go inwards.
Yes. So, and that one, I was using the metaphor of walking down a long corridor. And when I get to the end of this corridor, I open, slowly turn the knob, push open the door. And when I open the door and step through it, I am now in a past life.
Ooh, okay.
Yes. And I was also getting very good at self-hypnotism with this.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So I was getting to the point where I could feel my hand on the handle. I could feel it turning. I could hear the click. But uh-huh. I wasn't really able to
get through.
Get the door open and get through it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So around this time, I go to visit my grandma in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a teenager. So I'm riding the 151 bus in Chicago, mm-hmm. up and down Michigan Avenue, right? And this old lady, this old kind of white, so upper middle class lady gets on the bus.
Uh-huh.
Could have been my grandma, like is like what it was, right?
Yeah.
So somebody was like very familiar to me.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting up at the part where only old people and disabled people are supposed to sit.
Yeah.
I was told you're a rebellious teenager. So I'm sitting there and she comes on, she sits next to me. And within a couple of seconds, she takes my hand and she says, "You are opening doors and Ooh. You are not the only one who can go in and out. You need to stop."
Oh, now I have chills.
And then she got off the bus at the next stop and scared the I just swear
you
on
can,
this.
You can swear.
Scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
I never did that again. Never.
Oh, gosh.
Never mm-hmm. have ever even been tempted to do any of that stuff again. Ouija boards, none of it. It's like, mm-hmm. nope. No, thank you. We're done with all of that. And so, yeah.
Yeah. No, I fully believe it. So Insidious for me is like, if I had to think about what's the movie, because I really, really like scary movies, but I know that I've tapered off in watching scary movies, and it was because Insidious. Because talk about astral projection, I think by accident as a child, because I didn't know what was happening, and for me, it was just a very active imagination, that there was a lot of like astral projection happening for me.
Wow.
And in Insidious, like, right, that left the kid open to the kid's body open to other beings and getting taken over.
Was it Insidious? I think Insidious is the one with
Was it not Insidious?
I don't think so. Insidious is the one with the Australian actress. I can't think of her name right now. She was in Muriel's Wedding. But she's also in About a Boy. And it's Insidious, isn't it? I think. Maybe I'm wrong.
Hold on. Now I have to look it up because there's a whole... Yeah, it was Insidious. Yeah.
Was it Insidious?
Yeah, that one.
Maybe I didn't see that. No.
It's with so creepy.
That scary looking boy, I probably...
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. I don't think I saw that.
Too close to Reagan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it was... he was leaving his body open to stuff. Mm-hmm. And so he ended up in a coma because other things were coming into his body. He didn't know how to come back.
Ooh,
right. And so, yeah, exactly. So I was like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I knew that I was doing it by accident. And when I saw it on the screen, I was like, is that what I've been doing? Oh my God, how terrifying.
Oh my God. But what an amazing skill. Like,
yeah, I think if you can really hone it and actually do it intentionally and protect yourself
and protect
anchor,
yourself.
Yeah, it's I think it's pretty amazing, but also very dangerous. Like, on another time, maybe we could talk about it more. But like, there was a time in my life where there was a lot of just like people in the hospital and a lot of death and things happening, and I could. And I was very open, and I think it just got really scary really fast for me that I just closed everything off. And I look back and I'm like, I wish I hadn't closed everything off, because there was also just so much empowerment and being so connected
but
to the universe.
But you know, you could, for example, I mean, you could work with some coaches that could help you.
Yeah.
Or teach you how to do that in a way that's safe.
Because
honestly, that's an amazing skill that I think very few people can do.
Yeah. I think I've been starting to dabble a little bit in different things, but always trying to come back to a place of grounding within myself. because it, again, like if you don't focus and ground in yourself, it can get really scary to open yourself up to different things and energies.
For sure.
Right.
Like, and you don't, I mean, you know, like, I mean, I like the idea. I do believe that there are things we can't see. I think it would be foolish to think that there
aren't. Same.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's just so much about the universe we don't know.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe these just are other beings. I have no idea, right? What it is.
Yeah.
And if they're truly demons or just, you know, I mean, there are some pretty fucked up people out there as well.
So. Yeah.
You know, who knows? Maybe there's some, I don't know. I don't know. And I don't profess to know. Mm-hmm. But I think to say like it's not possible is, like, how could you say that? We don't know what's possible. We don't even know 90% of our own oceans. How
seriously.
Do you know?
It's pretty arrogant, right? Yeah. To be like, this is all that's possible in the world and all of that stuff is not.
Can I tell you a quick story?
Yes, please do.
This reminds me of it. There's nothing to do with the exorcist, but so when my son was about 14 years old, we had a house in Florida for a while. And so he had his room with his TV, and then we had a TV in the family room area.
Yeah.
And so I had seen on the Discovery Channel, preface it with the Discovery Channel, reputable channel, it had said they were going to be doing a mermaid documentary.
I've seen this.
And I am aware that we don't know 90% of our own. So I've been excited about this like all week long. Right. Uh-huh. So I'm like, I'm telling you, tomorrow is the mermaid documentary. And my husband, and my son's like, whatever. And so he looks up from his Game Boy, right? So the night of the documentary, I pop the popcorn again. I come into the family room, and my husband is watching some bullshit. And it's just like, he's like, no, just no. And so I was like, fine, I'll just go watch it with Mark. And so I go to watch it with my son, and he's watching cartoons. And I'm like, honey, the mermaid documentary.
Don't you want to watch?
He's like, documentary, Mom, come on. And he's like, Mark, it's on the Discovery Channel. You don't know. And so we start arguing back about this. I got so mad at him. I literally yanked his TV cable out of the wall and took his TV to the bed, to my bedroom. Yeah. Like, if you won't let me watch this documentary, I am taking it and you won't watch anything. And that was that. And for the longest time, my mother thinks that there are mermaids.
Like Discovery Channel said that there are.
I mean, come on.
Hello. Yeah. And everyone knows that they do their research.
Yes. It was like The Life of Pi. Did you ever read that book?
I did, yeah.
I thought it was a history. I thought it was someone's biography. I'm like, we don't know. We don't know. There are things in this world we can't.
You don't know what he saw?
Right. And the tiger was Omega. You got it? That's an alpha tiger.
Come on.
He was feeding it.
That's why I didn't kill him.
I just love that book, too.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So there's so much goodness in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like the eternal kind of naive child in me lives.
I love it.
So Anne actually has a few different places where you can find her. She has a link tree, which I'm going to put in the show notes, where you can find all of her amazing stuff that she's working on and how she's helping other people to really create a space for people to explore making what they love, what they do. And she has such a beautiful way of doing that. So look in the show notes, and in the next episode, you'll hear her tell you all about it as well.
Profoundly Seen is the podcast that invites us to consider various mental health issues and themes through the movies, shows, books, and more that we consume. Listen in every other Friday and see what we're exploring next. If you have any suggestions for the show, or if you yourself would like to be interviewed, I'd love to hear from you. Follow the show on Instagram and Facebook, or send me an email at hello@profoundlyseen.com. That's profoundly seen, profoundlyseen.com. If you want to support the show, don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, rate, and leave a review. Time to be seen!